Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Aaron Mote, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Innovate EDU, envisioning a radically transformed learning ecosystem in which every learner can access opportunities and resources. Innovate EDU began in New York City and has expanded into several nationwide research projects and initiatives. A well-known technology and data expert, Aaron also co-founded the Brooklyn Laboratory Charter School with her husband, Dr. Eric Tucker. She's been an advisor to the Obama White House, the State Department, and private sector companies from Intel to Google. Aaron, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and excited for the conversation.
We feel like the lucky ones, Aaron. Among other things, you're known as something of a tech wizard. You've worked to expand technology access all over the world. You've advised presidents and state departments, and now you're involved in a number of ed tech projects yourself, which we'll get into in a moment. But first, Aaron, how did you get interested in technology, in data, in infrastructure? What drew you to this field?
Thanks. I appreciate the wizard reference because right now I'm reading Harry Potter with both of my kids, Robert and Claire. So getting called a wizard in my house is a distinction. So thanks. I don't have a computer science degree. I taught myself all the computer science languages that I know and all the work that I've done in technology and became an enterprise architect. And so that means that I can only think in systems. And so I think enterprise architecture is something that we desperately need in education. And when I left public service and came into education, a very different type of public service, I was frankly shocked by the lack of durable, modern infrastructure that could power data, technology, and policy in our work. And so whether that was running a school at Brooklyn Lab and having to wait 6 to 8 months to get the student records of kids who were local to New York City, or whether that was wanting to build something that could help educators really get a picture of the whole child, because it didn't just bring together their academic and their attendance data, but also things about their passion and what they love to learn. And so part of the work around tech and data is because I think we desperately need to build the train tracks on which innovation can run in education. And so much of the work we do at Innovate EDU is focused on how do we build innovation infrastructure.
So in addition to the work you've done with government and with the private sector, you just mentioned the Brooklyn Laboratory Charter School. Before we get to Innovate EDU, could you just tell us a bit about that school? Why did you start it and what sets the school apart?
I think that so much of the work that happened at Brooklyn Lab was because I first wanted to make an impact in my own community. I'd been working globally for more than a decade and I felt a distance from impact when I left public service. And so I was literally walking down a street in Brooklyn with my now husband. He was not my husband then. I was thinking about going back into public service and he said, well, what if we built a school together? What if we built a school in our own community for the type of school we would hope for our own kids one day? And again, we were dating. So it was a messy marriage proposal on a street corner in Brooklyn, but it stuck with me. And we drew it up on a napkin and talked about what it would look like to think about educators like doctors and to train them that way. And what if we invited kids who weren't traditionally included in school or were often pushed out of other schools? What if we built a school that focused on entry at the sixth grade and closing massive gaps in learning? And so we actually built Brooklyn Lab and Innovate EDU at the same time. And Innovate EDU was really meant to take the learnings that were happening at Brooklyn Lab, like a laboratory, and build the capacity for those innovations to actually get out of a single school and partner with other schools and districts across the country. And we started our school in 2013, 2014 in New York City. And so there were some really challenging politics around charters and district schools. And so we built Innovate EDU to be that scaling agent from the beginning, that we would always be looking for partnership. We would always be looking for uncommon alliance. And so at Brooklyn Lab, the philosophy of the school was that we wanted to create a place for kids to be safe, known, and loved, and to have the ability to access opportunity that could create life trajectory changing pathways for them. That we would build a school where students, especially students who were often not seen as the students that you would want to recruit to a school, students who were juvenile justice involved or homeless or students with disabilities, we deliberately reached out to build a diverse student population that was inclusive for everyone. And that meant that the 132 students that started with us in sixth grade, 128 of them by the end of this year will graduate college on time, even after a global pandemic.
What you just described is obviously a huge marker of success. What do you feel like you and your husband got right about Brooklyn Lab? And what is it that you feel like, oh, if we could just go back time and just redo that bit again?
Well, first of all, I think you have 100 assumptions of what's going to happen and maybe one is right. And so some of the things I'm really most proud of about the experience at Brooklyn Lab, and it's important to say that, you know, I'm not involved in the day-to-day operations of the school anymore. I sort of get to wave at homecoming or graduation, and there's a really great leadership team who continues to lead the school community. We started a fellows program, an urban fellowship program, where we took folks who had just graduated college, who had this inkling that they wanted to get into education, but weren't quite yet ready to jump in and get a teaching degree or go through a type of alternative certification program. And so they joined the lab fellowship led by Innovate EDU, and they would serve in classrooms 2 hours a day for a group of students 3 times a day. So 6 total hours working with the same set of students, 1 in literacy, 1 in math. And this is really the beginnings of high dosage tutoring, same fellow, 5 times a week, working with young people to either remediate something that they needed to learn, or in some cases, accelerate to the next standard or to the next extension lesson. And so this group of fellows would then at the end of the year decide whether they wanted to continue in education or not. And either was a win for us because it really gave a scaffolded learning experience for adults to get to know how to become caring educators, how to form meaningful relationships with young people, and how to grow their own skills to become a classroom teacher. And it's amazing, a decade later, when I look at the faculty of Brooklyn Lab and I look at some of the faculty of schools around New York City, that these were folks who started with us as fellows delivering small group instruction for young people.
And it's alongside this fantastic work that you co-founded a nonprofit called Innovate EDU, which you now lead. Can you talk a little bit about what was the impetus for Innovate EDU? How did you put it together? What was it and what is it aiming to do?
At the very beginning of Brooklyn Lab, we were working in New York City. We were thinking about scale from the jump. How are we going to do things differently and then get those lessons and learnings out into the wider education sector? And in a dolphin tank in San Francisco, so not a shark tank, a dolphin tank in a windowless conference room in San Francisco, we got a big push from a group of folks around what would it look like to not do that work at the school? And how were you going to be able to sustain innovation in a school amidst all the political pressure in New York? What would it look like if you actually created 2 organizations, 1 built for scale, 1 built for school operations? I think it was the best piece of advice we ever received because it allowed us to do a set of activities at Innovate EDU that were always focused on partnership, always focused on building uncommon alliance, and always focused on thinking about how do we get something from being a special snowflake into the mainstream drinking water of education. And so it's the ethos of what we do today. How do we bring people together in uncommon alliances?
This is Greg Baer, along with Ryan Rudzeski. We're talking with Erin Mote, Executive Director and co-founder of Innovate EDU. Aaron, just a moment ago, you used that phrase, uncommon alliance. Uncommon coalitions is something that's central to the work of Innovate EDU. So that seems like an interesting concept. What is an uncommon alliance, and why is their uncommonness important?
I don't know how many nonprofits do this, but I wrote a manifesto that's on our website. If folks want to like really dig deep into what we're trying to do and creating the 80% common, but let me try to give the cliff notes to the manifesto, if you will. I think it's really important when you're trying to solve systems problems to bring people together who are going to help you look at a problem in a lot of different ways. And whether you want to use the analogy holding many pieces of the elephant and not seeing the whole elephant, or you want to talk about systems architecture, which I talk about all the time as an enterprise architect. But if you only look in one silo or in one piece, you're never going to get the type of large scale systems change that we desperately need. And so this idea that people have far more in common than they do different, I think is more important today than even it was when we founded Innovate EDU a decade ago. When you are trying to work at scale, when you are trying to work at large problem sets, you need to have many different and diverse perspectives at the table. And that if you do that and you bring people together over time, you build something called the trust dividend. And that trust dividend means that people are more willing to collaborate, that they build the muscle of collaboration. And I think you have to be deliberate about building that, that they're willing to trust each other, that they're willing to find what we consider the 80% common. And that's what the manifesto is. So in enterprise architecture, this is the concept that the back end is common across large scale systems, or that you use the same tech stack. And so maybe you take rideshare and you use Uber or Lyft or different types of rideshare platforms. Those rideshare platforms on the back end have most of their architecture common. They use the same Google Maps, the same payment systems. They actually use some of the same safety reporting for drivers. But the brand experience on the front end looks different. It feels different. And so that's exactly what it is to build an enterprise architecture for collaboration, to find the back end, the 80% common, the things that are infrastructure, and then to allow people to differentiate or specialize on the 20%, the things that are unique to them or their organization. And so whenever we're working on this concept of bringing together an uncommon alliance, we try to look for folks who bring differentiated expertise, who are willing to collaborate and who want to row together and complement each other, not compete. And in our sector, that can be really hard.
So for listeners who head to the Innovate EDU website and who find this manifesto, they're also going to see a long list of really exciting projects that these uncommon coalitions have allowed Innovate EDU and its partners to launch. So tell us a little bit about Project Unicorn and the notion of data interoperability.
Data interoperability is critical. So imagine you experience data interoperability every single moment of your life, that whether you're going to the ATM or you're going through an airport, you don't go to the United or to the American TSA person, you go to one TSA person. And that allows us to have security in our flight operations. It allows folks to know when you're traveling and where you're going. It allows folks to know if you've been delayed or not. And that level of data interoperability, could you imagine if we had it in education? Could you imagine if it didn't take 6 to 8 months for a young person's academic record to get from one school to the other? Or that the minute a young person walked into your classroom on the first day, you knew that the thing that really motivated them was Roblox or dinosaurs or Harry Potter. So much of what we do in education has to come down to building meaningful connections with young people. When we do that, we change not just their learning, but their life trajectory. And data, while it doesn't tell the picture of the whole person, it can equip us with information so that we can get to building those connections faster. We can improve communication and we can understand how to make a child feel safe, known, and loved.
Tell us about the EdSafe AI Alliance. This is something that's on a lot of people's minds lately when we talk about AI. This is having to do with the accountable, fair, efficacious, and safe use of AI. What do you mean by safe use? What makes AI safe or unsafe?
Yeah, well, I'm so glad we got this far into the podcast, and this is our first mention of AI. That has to maybe be a record on education podcasts. So any new technology when we deploy it in our classrooms, we need to make sure that we're doing so safeguarding our young people's information, making sure we're using good use of technology. And so the EdSafe AI Alliance is a group of organizations who have come together to further a framework that's focused on how do we do policy development around AI and education, and how do we all, again, row together in doing that work. And so when you think about the SAFE acronym, safety, accountability, fairness, transparency, and efficacy, it's really a roadmap for how we're working with districts, states, national and global governments to formulate policy development so that the use of AI in education does what we intend for it to do and doesn't have the unintended consequences that we've had with some other technologies in education.
And earlier you talked about the origins of the Pathways Alliance, which is your alliance to ensure a diverse and inclusive educator pipeline. What does the Pathways Alliance look like today? What are you most excited about?
It's growing so fast. It's incredible to see how many organizations are really willing to come together around a set of core tenets around what it would take for there to be diverse and equitable entry into the profession and the ability to retain a diverse workforce in the profession. This is my nerdiness. I'm probably most excited about the data infrastructure working group we have in Pathways right now, which is focused on a model technology stack for the 30 states that are implementing educator apprenticeships and what it'll take to make sure that we're ensuring that those programs are delivering on the promise of quality apprenticeships. I think the thing I'm most proud of historically with the Alliance has been the ability to bring together, I think, a coalition that nobody thought would ever come together to author the first competency-based apprenticeship with the Department of Labor around educator entry pathways. And that work is so groundbreaking for a number of reasons, but mostly because it's the first time there's really been a national framework for what does it mean for there to be a competent educator in the classroom and uses only 10 of those competency tenets in order to establish what we mean by a common quality bar.
Erin, if that's nerdy, we need to be doing a lot more nerdy things in this world. That sounds so important, so meaningful, so relevant in so many ways. As we begin to close our conversation, we're going to introduce you to our Remaking Tomorrow lightning round. I'm just going to ask you a few brief questions and you share with us the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Most uncommon coalition of which you've been part?
Rio 2.0 Climate Change Conference before Paris.
You've described yourself as an architect in many ways. Who's your favorite architect?
That's so hard. Because I'm an Arizona girl, I'm going to go Frank Lloyd Wright.
We like that one here in Western Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your favorite Harry Potter character?
You're just trying to start a fight in my house right now. I'm going to go Hermione Granger, only because a big part of my ethos is elevating powerful women to leadership.
As a girl dad, I'm going to support that. That's a fantastic answer. How can people find out more about the great work that you're doing, Erin?
InnovateEDUNYC.org. Reach out. It's not just me. And I really want to say that. I have an amazing team of people that I have the privilege to work with every single day. And they are the smartest, most mission-oriented folks on this planet who are all doing this work. And so reach out to connect with us and I'll put you in touch with people way smarter than me.
And Erin, before we let you go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
The thing that I would ask parents and educators to do right now is to do one thing that's outside of their comfort zone. We in this country do a lot of things with information that's fed to us or that we subscribe to, whether that's in our social media feeds or the media we choose. But one of the things that I've really watched change the life of a young person or even an adult is listening to someone who's different than them. And I think when we do that in our own life, we gain valuable perspective, and that's really important. And then the second thing I would say is focus on AI literacy in this hubbub around AI right now. at least understand what is AI when you're in these conversations.
Thanks again to Erin Mote, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Innovate EDU. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.